Okay, we're going to chant Jai Radha Madhava as we usually do before class. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyabihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyabihari. Gopi Jana Balaba Kiri Bharadhauti. Gopi Janabalaba Giri Bharad Haoti. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyabihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyabihari. Gopi Jana Malaba Giri Bharad Haoti. Gopi Jana Malaba Giri Bharad Haoti. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyabihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyabihari. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paramahansa. Also tell us it to Shri Shimad, His Divine Grace Abhaya Chananada Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Kijai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Kijai Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrin Gajai Navacharya Shidahidas Thakur Gajai Param Sekaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidvaita Gadadha Sri Vasudeva Gaur Bhaktivinoda Gajai Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopi Gopinath Shai Mukund Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Gajai Vrindavanam Gajai Maturadam Gajai Jagannatha Swami Kajai Munamai Kajai Shrimati Lasa Devi Kajai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Kajai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Gaur. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakta Vedanta Swami Saraswati Devi Bhavani Pajani Nivisesis Nivani Paschacha Deja Tarani. So Omaganata Miranda Shah Garanjana Shalakaya Chakshunam Niditam Yena Tasmai Shigurveda Mahap. So I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual masters, Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Okay, so it's good to see everybody. We're going to go on to the Bhagavad Gita now. Hold on. 18th chapter, Bhagavad Gita, text 68. Here we go. So, let me just clear the screen so I can see it clearly. Great. So, text 68. Ya idam padamam guyam Bhagbhakteshvavi dashati bhaktim mai param kritva mam eva shyatya samshayaha. Ya, anyone who, idam, this paramam, most guyam, confidential secret, not of mine, bhakteshu, amongst devotees, abhidashati, explains, bhaktim, devotional service, mai, unto me, param, transcendental, kritva, doing, mam, unto me, eva, certainly, ishati, comes, a samshayaha, without doubt. from one who explains the supreme secret to the devotees, pure devotional service is guaranteed, and at the end, he will come back to me. Wow. So let's go back. What is that supreme secret? Let's go back to the verse before. Well, even before that. Hold on a second. We will go back, 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 back. Anyway. Abandon all varieties of religion. Just surrender into Krishna. And also, man mana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji man namaskuru. Mani vaishasi sachante pratijino. Pratijine priyosine. Okay, so one who explains this secret of all secrets is guaranteed to go back to home, back to Godhead. So Srila Prabhupada explains, generally it is advised that Bhagavad Gita is discussed amongst the devotees only, for those who are not devotees will understand neither Krishna nor Bhagavad Gita. Those who do not accept Krishna as he is and Bhagavad Gita as it is should not try to explain Bhagavad Gita whimsically and become offenders. Bhagavad Gita should be explained to persons who are ready to accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is a subject matter for the devotees only and not for philosophical speculators. Anyone, however, who tries sincerely to present Bhagavad Gita as it is will advance in devotional activities and reach the pure devotional state of life. As a result of such pure devotion, he is sure to go back home, back to Godhead. So one may be confused by this verse saying that one who explains it to the devotees. Well, actually, as we mentioned before, that we should be more merciful than Krishna. We should see everyone as a potential devotee, except for those who are envious. Remember we talked about the different grades of devotees? Well, I will reiterate right now. There's the Kanishta Adhikari, there's the Majjhima Adhikari, and there's the Uttama Adhikari. So in other words, Kanishta means materialistic, Majjhima means middle, Uttama means topmost. Okay. Now I'll explain what that means. Like the Kanishta Adhikari, what happens with him? He sees God is in the temple. And outside the temple, or outside the church, or outside the mosque, forget it. You know, God, or maybe God's one day a week, like Sunday. So that's a Kanishta Adhikari. He doesn't understand the scriptures very well, or doesn't have faith. Okay. So that's Kanishta. We don't really want to be at that level. So we should aspire to be at the middle level. And I'll explain why we're not on the topmost level in a second. So the middle level is called the Majjhima Adhikari. Majjhima means middle. Okay. So just like if you say about someone, they are sumajjhima, that means they have a nice waist. Nice middle. Anyway. It's used in the Vedic literatures. Don't blame me. So, Majjhima means middle, and a middle person, which is probably most of us, hopefully, then they distinguish between four different entities. Four. One entity, of course, is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You obviously have to distinguish who is Krishna and who is not Krishna, or else you get in trouble. And the other entities are jiva souls. Okay, jiva souls are of three different categories in this particular context. The first type of jiva soul is those who are envious, and you don't try to explain anything to them. Those who are innocent, and then you try to explain things, and then there's the devotees. So anyway, you avoid the envious, unless you happen to be so powerful, like a great acharya, then you can make anyone Krishna conscious, like Lord Chaitanya. But as far as the innocent people, you try to bring them to Krishna consciousness. You explain, you see them as devotees, they've just forgotten it. In fact, everybody's a devotee, and everybody has forgotten it, except those who have remembered it. So, the innocent you try to bring back, the envious or those who would be critical, those will be offensive. You just avoid. You don't hate them. You still love them. But you understand you'd be beating your head against a rock to try to help these particular individuals. Oops. Anyway, so we're explaining this verse. So then, of course, the devotees, then we share the information with. That's simple like that, especially advanced devotees we take shelter of. So this is the point, that we actually present Krishna consciousness to everybody, and sometimes we actually take a chance of people being envious because we're going out in the public and distributing Srila Prabhupada's books and distributing this knowledge publicly or giving public lectures. Okay? Next verse is actually extremely important too. Chatasman manusheshu kashchan me priya kritamaha bhavata na cha me tasmad anya priyataro bhuvi na never cha and tasmat and then him manusheshu among men kashchan anyone may to me priya kritamaha more dear bhavata will become na nor cha and may to me tasmat then him anya another priyataraha dear bhuvi in this world. There's no servant in this world more dear to me than he. That is the person who tries to explain Bhagavad Gita to the devotees and to the innocent. Nor will there ever be one more dear. So you want to become really close to Krishna? Here's the secret. You teach others about Krishna. You become a guru. Not a guru in the sense that you initiate people all over the place. There's different types of gurus. There's Siksha Gurus, there's Bhartma Pradashika Gurus, there's Diksha Gurus. Let me explain what each one is. A Siksha Guru is someone who gives you help, information. You go to them and say, hey, my dear Siksha Guru, am I my body or am I my soul? And the Siksha Guru will tell you, you are a soul. That's just an example. And the Bhartma Pradashika Guru will start you on the path, may not continue with you. The example given sometimes, the Bhartma Pradashika Guru, is Dhruva Maharaj's mother, Suniti. Dhruva Maharaj wanted to accomplish something. He wanted to have a great kingdom. He wanted to get the love of his father, and his father's love was not forthcoming because his father loved another lady who was another boy's mother, okay? And so he decided to take on the spiritual path in order to accomplish his goals. And he asked his mother, you know, what should I do? His mother said, well, it's a good idea, you worship Vishnu. And he said, where's Vishnu, Ma? And she said, I heard that Vishnu was in the forest. So he goes to the forest, worships Vishnu, and achieves success. So she started him on the path. But his actual initiating guru, the one who gave him the mantra, was Narada Muni. So we have these different types of gurus. Another type of guru, indirectly guru, is basically someone who we see acting in a particular way in this world, and we learn a lesson from seeing them. For example, I can take Bill Gates as my guru. Why? Not that he gave me any spiritual instruction or anything like that. But I see that he's achieved so much money, but he hasn't achieved spiritual happiness. So I've learned from observing him. And in the Bhagavatam, there's this whole story of a Avadhuta Brahman who learns from different aspects of the material creation. He learns from trees. He learns from birds. I'll give you the example of what he learns from birds, which is really interesting. So there was this couple of birds, a male bird and a female bird. And the word in the Sanskrit is kapota. Kapoti. Kapoti is feminine. Kapoda is masculine. Sounds like it. So they raised a family of little birdies. Baby birds, for those of you who don't know what birdies are. So they raised a family of little birdies. And that family of little birdies was doing very nice. And the family was really sweet. Chirp, chirp. And the mother bird, father bird, were actually very doting parents. So one day, while the mother bird and father bird were catching some worms, a hunter caught little baby birds in a net. Terrible story. And then the mother comes back. She sees her kids in the net, and she dives down to rescue them. Guess what happens? I guess you can guess. She got caught in the net. Wow. And then the male bird, he comes and he sees his whole family in that net, and he thinks, oh my God, what's happened? And he just faints and he falls into the net. So the moral of the story is, of course, things are temporary, relationships are temporary. The moral of the story is we can't really save anyone. Krishna has to save people. We can try, but ultimately it's up to Krishna. And we become attached, thinking ourselves the doer of a particular activity. So in other words, that's a sort of guru, an observational guru, or guru, something we can learn from. For example, we can learn from the fact that we've seen so many of our relatives pass away. As far as my relatives are concerned, the only ones I know right now, after all these years, is my mother is still alive, and my brother is still alive, and me, who hopefully I'm still alive. And so I've learned that everyone else is going to honey bhutani, gachantiya, himalayam. The most wonderful thing is that we see other people going to the path of death or leaving the body, and we think, not me, but we should learn from that. We should see everyone's going. So that's called a observational guru. I'm just making that term up, but that is mentioned in the Bhagavatam too. So anyway, we got all these different gurus. But if you become the Vartma Pradashika guru, or you become the Siksha guru of someone and lead them to the Bhagavad Gita, that would be Vartma Pradashika guru. Or give them a Bhagavad Gita and train them in the Bhagavad Gita, or give a Bhagavad Gita class like I'm doing, or a seminar, or study as I'm doing right now, you become very dear to Krishna. And that's the reason I'm talking about the Bhagavad Gita with all of you, because now I know I'm going to become dear to Krishna, because I have explained the whole Bhagavad Gita. We're almost finished. Jai. That's for my benefit. And for your benefit, you've heard the Bhagavad Gita. Anyway, let's continue. Adyeshyate cha dyahimam dharmyam sangbhanam avhiyo yanagyagena tenaham ishtasyam iti me matahi. Adyeshyate, will study cha also ya he who imam this dharmyam sacred sangbhanam conversation of avhiyo of ours. Yana of knowledge, yagena, by the sacrifice, tena by him, aham, I, ishtaha, worship. Sham shall be, iti thus may my latim opinion. And I declare that he who studies the sacred conversation of ours worships me by his intelligence. So when you study the Bhagavad Gita, it's a type of worship of Krishna by your intelligence. Very easy to understand. Shadavanana suyascha shunuyadapi yo naraha sopi mukta shubhalokan Rapnuyat punya karmanam, Shadaban faithful, anasuyaha, not envious, cha, and Shunuyat does here api certainly yahu, naraha, a man sahahi, api also, muktaha, being liberated, Shuban, the auspicious, lokan, planets, Rapnuyat, he attains punya karmanam, of the pious. And anyone who listens with faith and without envy becomes free from sinful reactions and attains to the auspicious planets, where the pious dwell. So in other words, as was described earlier in the Bhagavad Gita, that if you're not a pure devotee, but you read the Bhagavad Gita and you try to understand the Bhagavad Gita, you go up to the heavenly planets, and after that, you come down, you take birth in a rich family, and you get the opportunity to take Krishna consciousness again. And if you're very advanced in Krishna consciousness and not quite a pure devotee, then guess what happens? You take birth in a pure devotee's family. And that birth is very rare. Anyway, your future is guaranteed. In the 67th verse of this chapter, the Lord explicitly forbade the Gita's being spoken to those who are envious of the Lord. In other words, Bhagavad Gita is for the devotees only. But it so happens that sometimes a devotee of the Lord will hold open class. In that class, not all students are expected to be devotees. Why do such persons hold open class? It's explained here that although not everyone is a devotee, still there are many men who are not envious of Krishna. It's exactly what I explained before about the Majjhima Adhikari. They have faith in him as the Supreme Personality of God. As such persons hear from a bona fide devotee about the Lord, the result is that they become at once free from all sinful reactions and after that attain to the planetary system where all righteous persons are situated. Therefore, simply by hearing Bhagavad Gita, even a person who does not try to be a pure devotee attains the result of righteous activities. Thus, a pure devotee, the Lord gives everyone a chance to become free from all sinful reactions and become a devotee of the Lord. So the compassion of a devotee overrides all other considerations. Generally, those who are free from sinful reactions, those who are righteous, very easily take to Krishna consciousness. In other words, those who don't take meat. And that's mentioned in the fourth verse of the first chapter in the tenth canto. Puman virajeta bina pashutnat. The word punya karmanam is very significant here. This refers to the performance of great sacrifices like the Ashwamedha Yajna mentioned in the Vedic literature. Those who are righteous in performing devotional service but who are not pure can attain the planetary system of the pole star or Dhruva Loka, where Dhruva Maharaj is presiding. He is a great devotee of the Lord, and he has a special planet which is called the pole star. So if you like, you can go there. I would rather go to Loka Vrindavan, if that's all right with you. So, kachade tat shrutam partha. Vayai ka grenak jetasa kachidak yana samoha panashtas te dananjaya kvachit, whether a tat this shrutam heard parto sanaprita twaya by you eka agrena with full attention jetasa by the mind kachit, whether a jnana of ignorance samoha the illusion panashtaha dispelled te of you dananjaya O conqueror of wealth Arjuna O sanaprita, that's Arjuna, O conqueror of wealth, have you heard this with an attentive mind? And are your ignorance and illusions now dispelled? So here's the teacher, Krishna, asking him. And Krishna's the spiritual master. The Lord was acting as the spiritual master of Arjuna. Therefore, it was his duty to inquire from Arjuna whether he understood the whole Bhagavad Gita in its proper perspective. It only took 40 minutes. If not, the Lord was ready to re-explain any point or the whole Bhagavad Gita if so required. Actually, anyone who hears Bhagavad Gita from a bona fide spiritual master like Krishna or his representative will find that all his ignorance is dispelled. Bhagavad Gita is not an ordinary book written by a poet or fiction writer. It is spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Any person fortunate enough to hear these teachings from Krishna or from his bona fide spiritual representative is sure to become a liberated person and get out of the darkness of ignorance. There's your guarantee. And Arjuna replies to Krishna's question here. Arjuna uvacha nashta moha smritir labda tvat prasada mayachuta titta smi gata sandeha harishe vachanam tava. Arjuna uvacha, Arjuna said, nashta dispelled, mohaha illusion, smritihi memory, labda regained, tvat prasada by your mercy, maya by me, achuta, O infallible Krishna, stitaha situated, asmi I am. Gata, remove, sandeha, all doubts. Kurishe, I shall execute. Vachanam, order, tava, your. Arjuna said, my dear Krishna, O infallible one, my illusion is now gone. I have regained my memory by your mercy. I am now firm and free from doubt, and I am prepared to act according to your instructions. So Arjuna makes the right decision here. The constitutional position of a living entity represented by Arjuna is that he has to act according to the order of the Supreme Lord. He is meant for self-discipline. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that the actual position of the living entity is that of eternal servant of the Supreme Lord. Forgetting this principle, the living entity becomes conditioned by material nature, but in serving the Supreme Lord, he becomes liberated, the liberated servant of God. The living entity's constitutional position is to be a servitor. He has to serve either the illusory Maya or the Supreme Lord. In other words, you always have to serve. You choose what you have to serve or who you have to serve. If he serves the Supreme Lord, he is in a normal condition. But he prefers to serve the illusory external energy, then certainly he will be in bondage. In illusion, the living entity is serving in this material world. He is bound by his lust and desires. yet he thinks of himself as the master of the world. This is called illusion. When a person is liberated, his illusion is over, and he voluntarily surrenders unto the Supreme to act according to his desires. The last illusion, the last snare of Maya, is to trap the living entity, is the proposition that he is God. In other words, it's not that you may necessarily think, I am God, but you'll think that I'm the controller, I'm powerful now, I'm spiritual, I perform my Kundalini yoga, and now I have all these powers, I'm strong, I'm independent. You may not actually think God in that word, but in essence you're thinking you're God. The living entity thinks that you're no longer a conditioned soul, but God, I'm in control. He's so unintelligent, he does not think that if he were God, then how could he be in doubt? That he does not consider. So that is the last snare of illusion. Actually, to become free from the illusory energy is to understand Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and agree to act according to his order. The word moha is very important in this verse. Moha refers to that which is opposed to knowledge. It means illusion. Actually, real knowledge is the understanding that every living being is eternally a servitude of the Lord. But instead of thinking oneself in that position, the living entity thinks that he is not a servant, that he is the master of this material world. For he wants to lord it over the material nature. That is his illusion. This illusion can be overcome by the mercy of the Lord or by the mercy of a pure devotee. When that illusion is over, one agrees to act in Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is acting according to Krishna's order. These are all points that we've brought out and Prabhupada has brought out previously, so I'm not going over them. A conditioned soul, illusion by the external energy of matter, does not know that the Supreme Lord is the master who is full of knowledge and who is the proprietor of everything. Whatever he desires, he can bestow upon his devotees. He is the friend of everyone, and he is especially inclined to his devotee. So he is the controller of this material nature of all living entities. He is also the controller of inexhaustible time, and he is full of all opulences and all potencies. The Supreme Personality of Godhead can even give himself to the devotee. In other words, if someone loves him purely, then Krishna becomes controlled by that devotee. That's the final aspect of pure devotional service. One who does not know him is under the spell of illusion. He does not become a devotee, but a servitor of Maya. Illusion. And being a servitor of Maya, you're bound by what? Three things. The gunas, goodness, passion, and ignorance. It's like being on a roller coaster. It's not an enjoyable experience. Arjuna, however, after hearing Bhagavad Gita from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, became free from all illusion. He could understand that Krishna was not only his friend, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he understood Krishna factually. So to study Bhagavad Gita is to understand Krishna factually. When a person is in full knowledge, he naturally surrenders to Krishna. When Arjuna understood that it was Krishna's plan to reduce the unnecessary increase in population, in other words, the demons, I'll explain that in a second, he agreed to fight according to Krishna's desire. He again took up his weapons, his bow and arrows, to fight under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So really what we're talking about here is an interplanetary battle. The demons actually took birth as kshatriyas and kings on the earth planet and were creating havoc. People like, you know, Duryodhana and all his nice brothers, they were creating havoc. And so the demigods actually took birth as their opposition. And Arjuna, of course, Arjuna is a pure devotee, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he is the son of Indra, one of the demigods. And, of course, the other Pandavas are actually sons of one of the demigods, too. Like you have Yudhisthira, the son of Yamaraj. And Nakula and Sahadeva, the sons of the Ashwini Kumaras, two brothers. And then you have Bhimsen, who is the son of Vayu, strong as the wind. Anyway, so these are all manifestations of the demigods, or sons of the demigods, or incarnations of the demigods. And also, when Lord Rama appeared, the demigods appeared as, I hate to say this, monkeys and bears to help the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, and now, after hearing that dialogue, we're getting back to the person who's basically speaking this whole conversation, having heard it by the mercy of Vyasadeva, his spiritual master, his name is Sanjaya, and Sanjaya is relating this conversation between Krishna and Arjuna to Dhritarashtra, his master. Because Dhritarashtra is blind, he was given, Dhritarashtra, the father of the Kurus, Duryodhana and company, was given the option, in spite of being blind, of being able to see with spiritual vision these conversations and what was going to take place in the battle of Kurukshetra. But he denied, he did not want to take up that particular benediction because he didn't want to see his sons die. So instead, his secretary, Sanjaya, got that benediction by the mercy of Srila Vyasadeva, who was the guru of both of them. Anyway. And so Sanjaya is relating this whole conversation to Dhritarashtra, whose sons are going to be killed very quickly in this battle of Kurukshetra. So Sanjaya Uvacha means Sanjaya said, Sanjaya Uvacha ityaham vasudevasya parthasya cha vahatmana samvadam imam asham adbhutam ramaharshanam. Sanjaya Uvacha, Sanjaya said, iti thus aham I vasudevasya of Krishna parthasya and Arjuna cha also maha atmanah of the great soul samvadam discussion. Imam, this, Ashosham, have heard, Adbhutam, wonderful, Romaharshanam, making the hairs stand on end. Sanjaya said, thus I have heard the conversation of the two great souls, Krishna and Arjuna. So they're in the palace. In other words, this conversation between Sanjaya and Dhritarashtra is taking place in the palace, not on the battlefield. But Sanjaya is able to see through that spiritual vision given to him by Vyasadeva what is happening on the battlefield. So, thus I have heard the conversation of the two great souls, Krishna and Arjuna, and so wonderful is that message that my hair is standing on end. And Prabhupada explains in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Dhritarashtra is inquiring from his secretary Sanjaya, what happened on the battlefield of Kurukshetra? The entire study was related to the heart of Sanjaya by the grace of the spiritual master Vyasa, which I just said. He thus explained the theme of the battlefield. The conversation was wonderful because such an important conversation between two great souls had never taken place before and would not take place again. It was wonderful because the Supreme Personality of Godhead was speaking about himself and his energies to the living entity Arjuna, a great devotee of the Lord. It'd be wonderful if I could see that happen. If we follow in the footsteps of Arjuna to understand Krishna, then our life will be happy and successful. Sanjaya realized this. And as he began to understand it, he related the conversation to Dhritarashtra. Now it is concluded that wherever there is Krishna and Arjuna, boom, there is victory. So, text 75. Vyasa prasada suto vyam itas guyam aham param yogam yogeshwarat krishna sakshat katha yatha swayam. Vyasa prasada, by the mercy of Vyasadeva, suta vana, have heard, a taught this. Guyam, confidential, aham, I, param, the supreme, yogam, mysticism. Yoga Ishvarat, from the master of all mysticism. Krishnat, from Krishna, sakshat, directly. Katayataha, speaking, swayam, personally. By the mercy of Vyasa, I have heard these most confidential talks directly from the master of all mysticism, Krishna, who is speaking personally to Arjuna. So, Prabhupada explains that Vyasa was the spiritual master of Sanjaya, which I explained before. And Sanjaya admits that it was by Vyasa's mercy he could understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This means that one has to understand Krishna not directly, but through the medium of the spiritual master. The spiritual master is the transparent medium. Although it is true that the experience is still direct, this is the mystery of disciplic succession. The example sometimes I give is a piece of glass that is clean. You can actually have a direct experience, just like I'm looking at the outside of my house right now with the trees and everything. That's a direct experience, but it's through the mercy of the glass. And I can look at another section of my house where there's a wall. I can't see anything outside. So you have to have transparency to be able to see the outside, and it's a direct experience. When the spiritual master is bona fide, then one can hear Bhagavad Gita directly as Arjuna heard it. There are many mystics and yogis all over the world, but Krishna is the master of all yoga systems. Krishna's instruction is explicitly stated in Bhagavad Gita, surrender unto Krishna. One who does so is the topmost yogi. This is confirmed. And the last verse of the sixth chapter, Yoginam api sarvesham, madgatein antaratmanam, sadave bhajate yomam, saame mukta yuktatmo mataha. Of all yogis, he who is a bhakti yoga surrenders to Krishna as the best. Narada is the direct disciple of Krishna and the spiritual master of Vyas. Of course, Narada's guru generally is understood to be Lord Brahma. He's initiated by Lord Brahma and also instructed by Krishna. So Krishna's his Siksha Guru. Siksha Guru means instructing guru. Remember, we talked about the different types of gurus. And Narada is also the spiritual master of Vyas. Therefore, Vyas is as bona fide as Arjuna becomes in the disciplic succession, and Sanjaya is the direct disciple of Vyas. Therefore, by the grace of Vyas, Sanjaya's senses were purified, and he could see and hear Krishna directly. One who directly hears Krishna can understand this confidential knowledge. If one does not come to the disciplic succession, he cannot hear Krishna. Therefore, his knowledge is always imperfect, at least as far as understanding Bhagavad Gita is concerned. In Bhagavad Gita, all the yoga systems, karma yoga, jnana yoga, and bhakti yoga, we explain what that is. Karma yoga means serving Krishna by your actions. Jnana yoga means trying to become liberated by mental speculation or serving Krishna or understanding, connecting to Krishna in that way. And bhakti yoga encompasses all these other yogas. And bhakti yoga means to please Krishna by love and devotion. And then automatically you get jnana. And you're also engaged in serving Krishna in a direct way. You get jnana, knowledge, and detachment from the world. Krishna is the master of all such mysticism. It is to be understood, however, that as Arjuna was fortunate enough to understand Krishna directly, so by the grace of Vyas, Sanjaya was also able to hear Krishna directly. Actually, there's no difference between hearing directly from Krishna and hearing directly from Krishna via a bona fide spiritual master like Vyas. So in other words, Sanjaya got the same benefit that Arjuna got. The spiritual master is the representative of Vyasadeva also. Therefore, according to the Vedic system, on the birthday of the spiritual master, the disciples conduct the ceremony called Vyasa Puja. In other words, you're worshiping the representative of Vyasadeva. Just like an ambassador is treated very respectfully by whatever country he's in because he's the representative of the country, not because he is just like something special in and of himself, but because he's representing the country. So, Rajan Sam Smritya Sambhadam Imam Adbhutam Keshavar Junaiho Punyam Shami Chamuhur Muhu. Rajan, O King, Sam Smritya, remembering, Sam Smritya, remembering, Sambhadam, message, Imam, this, Adbhutam, wonderful, Keshavar, Lord Krishna, Arjunaiho, and Arjuna Punyam. Pious Krishyami, I am taking pleasure. Cha also, muhu, muhu, repeatedly. O King, as I repeatedly recall this wondrous and holy dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna, I take pleasure being thrilled at every moment. And Prabhupada explains, the understanding of Bhagavad Gita is so transcendental that anyone who becomes conversant with the topics of Arjuna and Krishna becomes righteous and he cannot forget such talks. This is the transcendental position of spiritual life. In other words, one who hears the Gita from the right source directly from who? Krishna, attains full Krishna consciousness. The result of Krishna consciousness is that one becomes increasingly enlightened and he enjoys life with a thrill, not only for some time, but at every moment. Tatcha sam smritya sang smritya rupam atyad bhutam harehe. Vismayo me mahan rajan urishyami cha puna punaha. Tat that cha also sam smritya remembering rupam form ati greatly. Adbhutam wonderful harihe of Lord Krishna vismayaha wonder me my mahan great rajan o king urishyami I am enjoying cha also puna punaha repeatedly. O King, as I remember the wonderful form of Lord Krishna, I am struck with wonder more and more, and I rejoice again and again. He's in ecstasy. You can see this. Okay. It appears that Sanjaya also, by the grace of Vyas, could see the universal form Krishna exhibited to Arjuna. It is, of course, said that Lord Krishna had never exhibited such a form before. It was exhibited to Arjuna only, yet some great devotees could also see the universal form of Krishna. When it was shown to Arjuna, Vyasa was one of them. He is one of the great devotees of the Lord, and he is considered to be a powerful incarnation of Krishna. Vyasa disclosed this to his disciple Sanjaya, who remembered that wonderful form of Krishna exhibited to Arjuna and enjoyed it repeatedly. So here's a very wonderful verse. Yatra yogeshra krishna yatra partho danor jaraha tatra shrira vijayo bhutir dhruva nitir matir mama. Yatra, where? Yogeshra, the master of mysticism, Krishna, Lord Krishna, yatra, where? Partha, the son of Pritha, danu taraha, the carrier of the bow and arrow, tatra, there, shri, opulence, vijayaha, victory, bhutahi, exceptional power, dhruva, certainly, or certain, sorry, niti, morality, matahi, mama, my opinion. Wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme author, there will also certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power, and morality. That is my opinion. The Bhagavad Gita began with the inquiry of Dhritarashtra. He was hopeful of the victory of his sons, assisted by great warriors like Bhishma, Drona, and Karna. He was hopeful that the victory would be on his side, but after describing the scene on the battlefield, Sanjaya told the king, "You are thinking of victory, but my opinion is that where Krishna and Arjuna are present, they will be all good fortune." He directly confirmed that Dhritarashtra could not expect victory for his side. Victory was certain for the side of Arjuna because Krishna was there. Krishna's acceptance of the post of charioteer for Arjuna was an exhibition of another opulence. Krishna is full of all opulences, and renunciation is one of them. There are many instances of such renunciation, for Krishna is also the master of renunciation. The fight was actually between Duryodhana and Yudhisthira. Arjuna was fighting on behalf of his elder brother Yudhisthira because Krishna and Arjuna were on the side of Yudhisthira. Yudhisthira's victory was certain. The battle was to decide who would rule the world, and Sanjaya predicted that the power would be transferred to Yudhisthira. It is also predicted here that Yudhisthira, after gaining victory in this battle, would flourish more and more because he not only was righteous and pious, but he was also a strict moralist. He never spoke a lie during his life. There are many less intelligent persons who take Bhagavad Gita to be a discussion of topics between two friends on a battlefield, but such a book cannot be scripture. Some may protest that Krishna incited Arjuna to fight, which is immoral, but the reality of the situation is clearly stated. Bhagavad Gita is the supreme instruction in morality. The supreme instruction of morality is stated in the 9th chapter in the 34th verse, Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakta. In other words, fix your mind on Krishna and become his devotee. One must become a devotee of Krishna, and the essence of all religion is to surrender to Krishna. Sarva Dharma Puricchaja Mamikam Shatanam Brata Om Tvam Sarva Bhavebhyo Mokshishyami Masochya. Don't worry, Krishna will take care of you, free you from all sorts of reactions. The instructions of Bhagavad Gita constitute the supreme process of religion and morality. All other processes may be purifying and may lead to this process, but the last instruction of the Gita is the last word in all morality and religion. Surrender unto Krishna. This is the verdict of the 18th chapter. From Bhagavad Gita, we can understand that to realize oneself by philosophical speculation and by meditation is one process, but to fully surrender unto Krishna is the highest perfection. This is the essence of the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, the path of regulated principles according to the orders of social life and according to the different courses of religion may be a confidential path of knowledge, but although the rituals of religion are confidential, meditation and cultivation of knowledge are still more confidential. And surrender unto Krishna and devotional service and full Krishna consciousness is the most confidential instruction. That is the essence of Bhagavad Gita. Another feature of Bhagavad Gita is that the actual truth is the supreme personality of God in Krishna. The absolute truth is realized in three features. We talked about this many times. Impersonal Brahman, localized Paramatma, and ultimately the supreme personality of God in Krishna. Perfect knowledge of the absolute truth means perfect knowledge of Krishna. If one understands Krishna, then all the departments of knowledge are part and parcel of that understanding. Krishna is transcendental, for he is always situated in his eternal, internal potency, spiritual potency. The living entities are manifested of his energy and are divided into two classes, eternally conditioned and eternally liberated. Guess what we are? Eternally conditioned. But we can become liberated by the process of sadhana and kripa, by mercy and practice. Such living entities are innumerable, and they are considered fundamental parts of Krishna. Material energy is manifest into 24 divisions. We talked about that before, that Sankhya philosophy. The creation is affected by eternal time and is created and dissolved by the external energy. This manifestation of the cosmic world repeatedly becomes visible and invisible. In Bhagavad Gita, five principal subject matters, you've got to remember this, have been discussed. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, material nature, living entities, eternal time, and all kinds of activities, which is called karma. Okay, so remember that. Five different activities. God, Maya, material nature, the living entities, time, and karma. Karma means activities in this context. All is dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. All conceptions of the Absolute Truth, impersonal Brahman, localized Parama in the heart, and any other transcendental conception exists within the category of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although superficially, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the living entity, material nature, and time appear to be different, nothing is different from the Supreme. One and different simultaneous. Okay, Prabhupada's going to explain this anyway. But the Supreme is always different from everything, so it appears to be a contradiction. So this is Lord Chaitanya's philosophy, which is that of inconceivable oneness and difference. It's called the Chincha Beda Beda Tattva. This system of philosophy constitutes perfect knowledge of the Absolute Truth. The living entity in his original position is pure spirit. He is just like an atomic particle of the Supreme Spirit. Thus, Lord Krishna may be compared to the sun, and the living entities do sunshine. Because the living entities are the marginal energy of Krishna, they have the tendency to be in contact either with the material energy or with the spiritual energy. In other words, the living entity is situated between the two energies of the Lord, that's us, marginal, and because he belongs to the superior energy of the Lord, he has a particle of independence. By proper use of that independence, that's us, he comes under the direct order of Krishna. Thus, he attains his normal condition in the pleasure-giving potency. Otherwise, he goes into the misery-giving potency, which is the material world. You got a choice. You choose misery or pleasure. And thus ends, or this end, the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 18th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of its conclusion, the perfection of renunciation. Okay? Just one other point I wanted to make. Why is Krishna the chariot driver of Arjuna? Well, before the battle of Kurukshetra, or before everything was set up, there was some discussion as to whether Krishna would take sides in the battle. I mean, Duryodhana actually wanted Krishna on his side. Actually, he was trying to encourage Balaram to encourage Krishna to take his side. And Arjuna wanted to have Krishna on his side. So what happened is that Krishna said one day to Duryodhana, or he sent a message to Duryodhana and Arjuna, that I'm going to offer you both one of two things. Either you can have me, and I won't fight in the battle of Kurukshetra. I'll just be there without fighting, without any of my weapons. Or you can have my army, and my army is unconquerable. Nobody has ever been able to conquer my army, which is called the Narayan army. Okay. And the way this is going to be decided is the first person who I see today, I will give them the choice between the two. So, they're both very anxious. So Duryodhana arrives first at Krishna's bedstead. And Duryodhana, being very tricky, seats himself at Krishna's head, thinking, you know, Krishna's going to wake up. He looks, oh, there you are, Duryodhana. You're the first person I saw. And Arjuna, being very humble, sits on the floor near Krishna's feet. So Krishna opens his eyes, wakes up, and he looks down. You know, usually you don't look, you look down. And he sees Arjuna. He says, oh, Arjuna, you came. I saw you first. What do you choose? And Duryodhana is thinking, oh, this is terrible. Now Arjuna's going to choose Krishna's army. But Arjuna says, I choose you, Krishna, even though you're not going to fight. And Duryodhana is thinking, joy. Arjuna was pretty stupid. But actually, Arjuna was pretty intelligent because wherever there's Krishna, there's victory. And somehow or other, the Narayan army, that is Krishna's army, got destroyed in the battle of Kurukshetra. And Krishna, even though he didn't fight, of course, to give you a little hint about what happened in the battle of Kurukshetra, except in two instances, Krishna didn't personally fight. Of course, he was giving advice the whole time. One instance was, in both instances, he was interfering with Grandfather Bhishma's fighting, because Grandfather Bhishma was so fierce he could have defeated Arjuna, and Krishna rushed at him one time with a chariot wheel, another time he defended Arjuna. Anyway, but other than that, Krishna didn't fight, but he was giving Arjuna all sorts of tricky advice during the whole battle. And, you know, one particular point in the battle, he caused the sun to disappear, so everyone thought the day was over, and Arjuna was able to accomplish something knowing that the day wasn't over. I'm not going to tell the whole story of the Mahabharata. It was by Krishna's mercy that Arjuna was able to win, and the Pandavas were able to come out successful. Of course, just about everybody else died. There were a few exceptions. And that's the Bhagavad Gita. So, if anyone wants to know the story behind the Bhagavad Gita, besides the philosophy, then you should read the Mahabharata, which is quite a lengthy book. And one day I can give a summary of the Mahabharata, or you can go see the movie, but which is not too accurate. Okay, so now we'll take some questions. And tomorrow we're going to start one way or the other with the Nectar Devotion. I may just do a summary of the whole Nectar Devotion first before we start reading it, so we know what form the Nectar Devotion is in, because that may not be apparent if you just start reading it. Okay, so now we will take questions from everybody. Hold on one second. I'm going to allow you to speak. This is Zoom's ideal. You can keep people from speaking. I love it. So anyway, who wants to ask a question?
Gurudev.
Uh-oh. All right, what's the question, Pranesha?
Yeah, my question is how to deal with the people who are like Arya Samaji and who is like envious about deity worship and who is not ready to listen also about Krishna.
Then you don't deal with them. Arya Samaji people, well, the interesting thing about Arya Samaj and Brahmo Samaj, it's basically atheistic. They're more like karma mimamsa people. You know, they do their puja, sacrifices, yajnas, and everything like that. But they don't ultimately believe in a person. They don't do deity worship and stuff like that. And just to give you a little history, the Arya Samaj and Brahmo Samaj were actually formed to try to create peace in India between the different religions. Because the primary objection the Muslims had towards Hinduism was the deities. I mean, the Muslims don't mind the fact that everybody chants Hare Krishna. I mean, they can take it or leave it, because they chant Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar. There's no problem for them. But what they really hate is when there's a form of God. I mean, even they don't like to have, they don't admit pictures of Muhammad or basically any other picture, strict Mohammedans, or they'd like to be called followers of the Islamic tradition, don't even like any sort of pictures. Therefore, you'll see in the Quran there's all sorts of elaborate calligraphy, which actually enables them to exercise their artistic talents without breaking the rules of the Islamic tradition. So basically you had a number of people, and not only the Arya Samaj people and Brahmo Samaj people, but others trying to come up with some particular adjustment of religious belief so everybody could love each other and cooperate with each other. So Arya Samaj, you know, they came up with this particular point that the real point is to follow the Vedas, the original Vedas, you know, the four original Vedas, and do sacrifices and everything like that. And they just really don't believe in God. Some of them actually like to hear the Ramayana. That's what I've discovered. Even though they don't believe Rama's God, you know, whatever. But they like the story, and they like the story of the Mahabharata. So what I do with the Arya Samaj people is I don't try to convert them. Because basically it's an atheistic thing. It's not Vedic. They're Nashti. They're atheistic. Atheistic, you know, they follow the Vedas in the name, only they don't understand the purpose of the Vedas. So I don't waste time with them. That's all. You know, why waste time? You know, we should spend time with people who are actually more submissive or more open to digging up Krishna consciousness. I mean, we've had some Arya Samajis joined the Krishna conscious movement because they were understanding the era of their ways, the era of their beliefs. You know, Dayananda Saraswati, I mean, he didn't join, but he was one of the founders. So, anyway, that's Arya Samaj. So, you understand? Don't waste time. It's better to find someone who's just innocent, who doesn't express any religious belief, than to have someone who has a really bogus so-called religious belief. You understand? So just stay away, give them prasadam. Well, you're not Arya Samaj. You're a Vaishnava. So don't worry about it. But just, yeah, people are envious. And of course, in the West, we find envious people too, like atheists. I mean, I don't really spend so much time with atheists because, what about the Jains? Many Jains actually are extremely favorable. They worship Mahavir. Someone's asking a question about Jains. And they're into nonviolence and everything like that. They're not precisely, they're not that philosophical. They're easier to deal with as far as, and the Sikhs also are easier to deal with too. You know, they also, there's some belief in God. But the Arya Samaj is definitely an atheistic type of group that we just haven't had much success with, and Prabhupada hasn't had much success with the Arya Samaj. Namam duskritina muta prapajante nuradama mayaya pritigyana sunama avamashrita. Their intelligence has been stolen by illusion. So why spend time? Okay. Arya Samaj. So, and get, you know, they can chant Hare Krishna. Sure, we get them to chant Hare Krishna. I mean, even if we get together with people of the Islamic tradition, we can ask them to chant Hare Krishna with us, and sometimes they do. I mean, especially the Sufis, they're pretty cool. They get into dancing and chanting, and many other Muslim groups hate the Sufis for that reason, because they're really into ecstasy, because they dance and chant and they glorify God. So their particular group is very close to the bhakti movement. And there's many other bhakti movements too in India that were influenced by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Arya Samaj was definitely not influenced by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay, so any other questions? Who else has a question? Hi, Chaitanya.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my respectful obeisances.
Accept my blessing. So, good to see you. So, what's up? What's the question?
Just the question where Krishna gives the final instruction in the Gita about surrendering unto him, and then he will take away all these sinful reactions. What does he actually mean by that? Because sometimes you see devotees who appear to be fully surrendered, but still there's, you know, these reactions you see, or there's a misfortune, or what have you. How do we understand that?
Well, first of all, Krishna is saying to Arjuna that when you do what he says, this is taught previously in the Gita, that if you do what he says, there's no reaction to those particular activities. And the Prabhupada gives the example, and we spoke about that earlier, not today, but earlier in these classes, that if a government orders a soldier to kill, the soldier's not held responsible for that killing. But if a soldier kills on his own, he's held responsible. Yeah. So that's really what Krishna is indicating there. Also, when one takes up the chanting of Hare Krishna, there's no karmic reactions, but there may be Krishna directly putting a devotee in difficulty, which is not a reaction to help a devotee advance. You know, you see devotees get sick, you see devotees pass away. I mean, every devotee has to pass away, you leave their body sometime or other. You'll see devotees have car accidents, automobile accidents, and these may not necessarily be reactions. They may be just Krishna putting the devotee, or maybe due to the devotee's foolishness, he fell asleep while he's driving. Can't always say, you can't blame karma for everything. I mean, sometimes we are pretty foolish and we're the blamer. We're to blame. like if we fall asleep while driving, you can't say that was my karma or that was Krishna. You can say that was my foolishness. And Prabhupada indicated that when some devotees did get in an accident, he said it wasn't Krishna's mercy, it was their foolishness. So it's not that everything that happens to a devotee is, or nothing that happens, actually nothing that happens to a devotee is karma. It could be Krishna or their own foolishness or their own intelligence. So we could, or maybe Krishna giving them a token reaction of their past karma just to remind them that right. they had some sins. Or maybe Krishna, if one happens to be a guru, then Krishna reminding him of Krishna reminding the guru when he initiates the disciple that you're taking a heavy burden here. Generally, Prabhupada said when the guru gives initiation, he may get some reaction either in dreams or something like that. You know, like a bad dream. I remember I had one bad dream. I think I told this. It's funny, but it actually was true. That I was dreaming that I was a member of, I hate to mention this, Donald Trump's cabinet in the White House. You know, that was a nightmare. I probably, some disciple was giving me their worst possible karma or something like that. And then, and I woke up in a sweat and I said, oh my God, how can I do that? Okay, so, okay, another question from Vijay Radhika. It's, how can you, Rishikesh, hold your horses. Humble obeisances, Gurudev. Can you please explain why pure devotees like Hanuman, why they were born in a lower form to serve Krishna, to serve Lord Rama? I mean, first of all, Hanuman is not exactly a monkey. He was a Kimpurusha, which is not a monkey. You know, he was very powerful. He was able to fly up to the sun. He was almost eat the sun. He was able to lift a giant mountain and carry it back. I mean, that's not your ordinary gorilla. That's an extraordinary personality. So sometimes, you know, pure devotees are put into different species to serve. And that's not, they're always remembering Krishna when they do that. I mean, even Krishna takes a fish incarnation. Why is Krishna put in, take the body of a fish? Of course, he is, has a spiritual body. It's the form of a fish. Because it's, I mean, his pastimes. So for Krishna's pastimes, pure devotees and Krishna take, or appear in what appears to be lower forms. It's not a bad thing. I mean, I wouldn't mind being like a monkey and helping Hanuman. That'd be pretty cool. Attacking Lanka and getting rid of Ravan. I mean, that would be ecstasy. I wouldn't mind being a speck of dust in Vrindavan. Uddhava, one of the greatest devotees of Lord Krishna, prays to become like creepers or dust in Vrindavan, and he takes birth as creepers and dust in Vrindavan. And that's generally, if you say dust or creepers, that's a pretty low form, lower than a monkey, as far as I can see. But to serve the Lord, or to even be at the feet of the great devotees like the gopis, that'd be worth it. I wouldn't mind being a creeper if the gopis would step on me sometimes. And so Sumukh says, we cannot serve Krishna with material senses. Yes. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Vichate Sarva Pati Vaniya Muktam Tat Pratiplena Niyamalam. So we also have spiritual senses. And these spiritual senses, by the mercy of the spiritual master, being uncovered. And Krishna, the spiritual master, accepting our service, and he's helping us uncover the spiritual senses. And the spiritual master is offering our service to Krishna by the mercy of Guru Maharaj. And Rishikesh had a question we've been holding off on. So Rishikesh, you can unmute yourself.
Yes, Gurudev, thank you. Gurudev, I had a question about Duryodhan. Duryodhan was an incarnation of Kali.
Yes.
So he helped Krishna, he served Krishna to gather all those demonic forces, right? In one sense, to eradicate them.
Well, yeah, Duryodhana had a mission. He's considered the worst of the demigods. It's mentioned in the Mahabharata. And his mission was basically to get everybody fighting with each other so all the demons on the earth could be wiped out. So sometimes one of the demigods has to play the part of a demon just to stir things up a little bit. And, you know, like you even have Narada Muni. Of course, Narada Muni doesn't play the part of a demon, but he appears to take the part of the demon sometimes. I'll give you an example. When Kamsa wanted to kill all the sons of, well, the eight sons, of Vasudeva and Devaki, Vasudeva brought his first son to Kamsa. And Kamsa, feeling really sentimental about the whole thing, you know, because even demons get sentimental, Kamsa said that, actually, it's the eighth son supposed to kill me. You better take this kid back. Bring me the eighth son. Then what happened is that Narada Muni goes to Kamsa and says, hey, Kamsa Prabhu, don't you understand? Krishna is very tricky. These devotees are very tricky. You don't know how they're counting. You know, you can say eighth son can be the first son if you count down, you know, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Or they may count in a strange way. You know, there's different, like there's base 5 system, base 2 system. So, you know, because Kamsa was quite expert in mathematics. He understood different mathematical base systems. Anyway, so Narada Muni said, you know, you don't believe it, that it, the eighth son. Don't believe it. And Kamsa said, you are right, Guru Maharaj. And so Kamsa started to kill all the sons of Vasudeva and Devaki. So here is a devotee apparently stirring up the demons. And Narada Muni is quite expert in doing that. And he even sometimes arranges for Radharani to get angry with Krishna. I mean, there's that whole interesting story that Narada Muni was serving Radharani, and Krishna said to Radharani, you better be careful, this guy. He causes problems. And Radharani didn't take it very seriously. So then Narada Muni pleased Krishna, and Krishna said, ask for a benediction. And Narada Muni said, just wait, I'll ask for a benediction at the right time. And then one particular time, Krishna was supposed to swing on a swing with Radharani, and Narada Muni went to Krishna and said, we're waiting for Radharani to come, but in the meantime, please swing on the swing with Lalita Devi. So he was swinging on the swing with Lalita Devi. Then Radharani comes, and she gets so angry to see Lalita Devi, who's supposed to be her best friend, swinging on the swing with Krishna. And she goes off in a huff and a puff, and later on Krishna has to apologize and cry and all that stuff. And then he warns her, he says, don't ever believe Narada Muni, don't hang around with that guy anymore. He always causes these conflicts. So you see, you know, even pure devotees like Narada Muni, they have it, sometimes their service is to cause conflicts. And they have a sense of humor. You know. What?
When you talked about this Kamsa, Kamsa, you know, killing all the, he ordered Putna to kill all these innocent children of Gopijanas, you know, of Vrindavan. So I was wondering why in the presence of Krishna, all these Gopijanas had to face all this crisis of losing their child in hands of Krishna.
The boys were killed, not the Gopis weren't killed. Kamsa was killing them somehow or other with Krishna's arrangement. I mean, Putana, you know, she really did bad stuff. And anyway, if people die in Vrindavan, they go back to Godhead. There was Krishna's arrangement. Somehow or other, Krishna has this arrangement that devotees sometimes pass away in interesting ways. There's nothing inauspicious or auspicious. There's nothing inauspicious about a devotee's passing. A devotee can pass away through different means. A devotee can pass away in a car accident. A devotee can pass away by a disease. A devotee can pass away by old age. But whatever or however the devotee passes away, it's auspicious because he's remembering Krishna. Somehow or other, that was Krishna's arrangement. I mean, this whole material world is cruel anyway. You can ask, why did Krishna create such a cruel place? that, you know, we are separated from our beloved family members or from our whatever. You know, it's just cruel, even in spiritually, you know, we're separated. I'm separated from Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada left 1977, and this is, you know, already 2020. You know, how is it that I'm still living? You know, this. So this is very cruel. Actually, there's a story about Srinivasacharya. When Srinivasacharya was on his way to Vrindavan, then he heard that right before he got to Vrindavan, Rupin Sanatan Goswami had passed away. And he thought, I'm not going to Vrindavan, that cruel place. So, because he was feeling so much separation. Of course, later on, he met with Jiva Goswami and Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami and some of the other Goswamis. So that's a different story. But you know, sometimes the apparent cruelty that a devotee comes across is actually meant to teach him or her things about this material world and deepen their attachment for Krishna. Krishna's very cruel. He left Vrindavan when he was 16 years old. Some say 12, but I say 16 because Prabhupada said 16. When he was 16 years old, and he left these poor girls to lament for him. I mean, these were young girls. They knew no one but Krishna. They were completely dedicated to Krishna. They were going crazy from one moment separation from Krishna, and then Krishna leaves for 100 years. You know, and he told them he's coming back, and all he does is send these messengers. You know, he sends Uddhava back as a messenger. He sends Balaram is a messenger, and they're both saying that Krishna is just now coming, and Krishna never comes. So, you know, apparently you see a lot of cruelty there, but that cruelty, you don't know what's happening internally in the devotees' hearts and consciousness and emotions. Whatever Krishna does is good. Krishna, you may crush me by your embrace, you may leave me brokenhearted by not being present before me. You're completely free to do anything and everything and remain my worshipful Lord unconditionally. Of course, those are not my words, Krishna. That's Radharani's words. You know, if I had to be honest, I would say, Krishna, you're not free to do anything and everything. You better do what I want. You know? You know, we have to be honest about it. You know, you really feel like that, and Krishna will actually say, okay, fasten your seatbelts, here we go. And then you're going to be in trouble. If you're like Queen Kunti and say, again and again, give me difficulty so I can remember you, then Krishna will say, okay, you said it, not me. So I know what to say. I can repeat the prayers of the great devotees, but I don't attribute them always to me. Because I'm careful with Krishna. You know, I know that Krishna will take me on my word. And then, shoo, then life gets very interesting at that point. Life is already interesting enough. Okay. So, just one of the questions. I'm answering this one as a message. People go to Dhruvaloka. Do they come back to the earthly planet? Dhruvaloka is actually the local Vaikuntha planet, but it's not. You still have to be perfectly Krishna conscious to go back to the spiritual realm. You can come to the earth planet after Dhruvaloka, or you can actually go back to the spiritual world, depending on your consciousness. Dhruva Maharaj actually became like Indra at one particular point. No, it wasn't Dhruva. No, I'm thinking of someone else. Anyway, so Dhruvaloka, don't worry about Dhruvaloka. You can go back to the spiritual world, or you can remain there in Dhruvaloka for some time, or come down to the earth planet, depending on your desires. Okay, so tomorrow we're going to start with, I guess we'll do a summary of the Nectar of Devotion first, maybe a little slideshow, just to show you how everything fits in the four directions, east, north, west, south. Then we'll start reading the Nectar Devotion like we've done with the Bhagavad Gita. So congratulations to all of you who have come through with us, all these classes. This is the 118th class on the Bhagavad Gita. all these classes are now on my Facebook, not just Facebook, because you'll have a hard time finding them, but on my YouTube channel, Veer Krishna Goswami. If you want to see them, they're all there right now, except for this last one, which I'm going to upload this evening. So we'll see everybody tomorrow evening. Thank you. All glorious to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Bhagavad Gita, Ki Jai. Hari Bol.